Welcome back to another episode of Stacking Denny's. I'm Jordan McAbee of Roto Baller, my co-host Nick Giffen of the Action Network. Circuit of the Americas, the first road course race of the season, is in the books. William Byron, fastest in practice, fastest in qualifying, fastest in the race, especially with track position. He gets his second win of the year. First driver to get multiple wins this year. First driver to get multiple wins the last three seasons. He now has 10 wins with this next-gen car, 8 wins over his last 40 starts. Christopher Bell, charging late, ended up second. He used that very weird strategy. Ty Gibbs third, Alex Bowman fourth, Tyler Reddick fifth. Nick, what'd you think of that race? 50% of Jeff Gluck's poll said that they did not like it.
Yeah, that was about as 50-50 as it gets on the poll.
I
don't know. I didn't think it was great, but it was fine. I mean, you could pass. Certainly, you could pass. We saw Christopher Bell passing. The tires mattered. We love when tires matter. Yep. We saw William Byron pass Ty Gibbs on the same strategy, on the same tires. So, yeah, it was possible to pass. I think people want action, right? They want crashes. Right. They want restarts. They want that. And when they don't get it, they say it's a bad race. But I thought it was fine. It wasn't anything special, for sure. It wasn't absolutely not anything special. But it was an okay race. I certainly wouldn't put it in the bad pile. It was just, you know, William Byron had a dominant car and Christopher Bell had a dominant car, and they were on different strategies. So we never really got to see the pass for the lead there at the end because Ty Gibbs held up Christopher Bell. But, you know, if he doesn't hold up Christopher Bell, his own teammate, Christopher Bell probably passes William Byron with one or two laps to go and an amazing finish. And all of a sudden that pole is 70-30 instead of 50-50.
Exactly. Yeah. I think if that race went one more lap, I think Bell would have had him. I mean, he was closing like crazy. And I do think I'm not fully convinced that Byron had the best car in that race. I just feel like he had the best track position, and it was hard to pass the leader unless you really had a much better car.
Who do you think, besides Bell and Byron, who do you think may have had the best car? Because
I think Bell had the best car by far.
Yeah, I agree with that. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I didn't say Byron had the best car. I said Byron had the best car other than Bell.
Yeah, exactly. No, I wasn't trying to correct you there. Right. I was just, I feel like I also, I didn't really understand the strategy by Bell and his team. One, because it fucked over my 50-1 stage one bet. I'm still irritated about that. But I didn't understand it. That's not the winning strategy.
I understood it. Get the stage point. You already got to win. You grab the stage point, you just make it a two-stop race, whereas everybody else made it a three-stop race.
Yeah. And, well, no, Reddick didn't win it last year like that, did he? Reddick was on Reddick a different strategy than everyone last year.
Yeah. He did an extra stop.
Yeah.
But it made sense. It ended up backfiring because, teammate and just it actually ended up working out perfect, because when you do that kind of a strategy, you either want it to go green all the way or the timing of the caution needs to be very specific. You don't want an early caution, like right after you pit. You want it either to go green all the way or a late caution, something like that. Because if there had been a late caution and then those restarts, you know, Bell would have been able to, first of all, who knows what the leaders would have done in terms of pitting, because tires mattered so much. But it's one of those things where Bell didn't want to caution right after he pitted because, well, maybe he did. I don't know. It's tough to say. It's a weird spot. I get the strategy. It didn't work out. But when you have such a good car like that, I think almost any strategy works.
Yeah. Like I said, they're really not. I think another aspect of this is there wasn't a lot of surprises. You know, we saw Byron the last two road course races of the season. He finished first and second. Bell's always good at road courses. Ty Gibbs, we talked about him last week. I was all over Bowman early week last week, as with Ross Chastain. Both of them looked good. Chastain's pit crew screwed him there on that final stop. You know, Allmendinger finishing sixth. Buescher, top 10 machine at road courses. Cannot believe Caesars hung a plus 240 top 10 line for him after qualifying, by the way.
On who?
You know, on Chris Buescher.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, plus 240. That. Everyone else was plus 140, and then Caesars dropped 240, and I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. Like, what?
That's amazing.
Yeah. Kyle Busch, Truex, you know, they were up there all day, very strong. Not a lot of surprises. No. I think that's part of the reason why maybe people didn't really enjoy this race. As well as the actual broadcast itself. which it's, I understand it's tough to broadcast a road course race. And this is going to be part of my whine about it, but I'm going to talk about it now. I understand it's kind of difficult. It's very difficult, especially a 20 turn road course. Like this track is massive. I understand that, but it was so bad. Like, it was, nobody knew what the hell was going on. There were people that were wrecking and they just had no clue. And the broadcast had no intention of even trying to figure out what the hell was going on. Right. You know, people had to come down, like right at the beginning when Bubba Wallace and those guys had their issues, they briefly showed it and then just went on to talk about the leaders.
Yeah.
You had Truex get involved in that. You had Bubba Wallace get involved in that. You know, LaJoy, who had the best qualifying effort of his career, got in it. Like, there's so much storylines and they just did not care. So that was frustrating because we, like you said, yes, viewership was up this race and we have had amazing momentum at the beginning of this season with, you know, great races back to back to back to back. And yes, this was kind of a dud compared to everything else, but I think another part of it is, and what could turn off these new watchers of NASCAR is that broadcast right there, because there was no explanation of why this racing was different, of really why guys were doing alternate strategy. Like, there was just no explanation, and that just frustrated the hell out of me. You know, obviously we knew what was going on because we know road course races. We know how these play out. I follow Twitter like a hawk because that's where I get all my information when the broadcast doesn't do it.
Yeah.
But the casual viewer isn't doing that, and that just frustrates me, you know?
Yep, exactly. And like for me, I don't even pay attention to the broadcast as much because I was looking at live betting that race and there were a lot of good live betting opportunities. I made three live bets, and you mentioned you didn't understand Bell's strategy. Well, I made a first stage live bet on Suarez when he was slicing through the field. He passed Larson, passed SVG, he passed SVG, was catching Larson, passed a whole bunch of other good cars and looked really good. And for some dumbass reason, their team decided to do the strategy where they stay out. And it would have made sense if you got the stage point or the playoff point for winning the stage, but Bell's team stayed out. So what are you doing? You're finishing second in the stage and you're already locked into the playoffs essentially anyway. Why? Yeah. What good does that do you? So, okay, then do Bell's strategy where you do the two stopper. Nope, they pitted during that stage caution and then everything went horrible. And so my whole bet is predicated off the fact that he's going to come in two laps before the end of the stage and then he doesn't do that. Well, that's okay. Yep. Maybe he'll run the Bell strategy. Nope, doesn't do that. So my 65-1 live bet's already screwed there. But then I also had a 30-1 live bet on Bowman. And then I had I bet Christopher Bell 9.5-1 when he kind of was making that last stint charge. But my bet moved it to 7.5-1. So I tracked it as 7.5-1 in the Action app. So my bets, I had five outrights. I had the three live bets. I had Ty Gibbs and I had AJ Allmendinger. And they finished 2, 3, 4, and 6.
That's just frustrating.
2, 3, 4. Wait, how many bets did I have? I had Allmendinger, Gibbs, Suarez, Bell, Bowman. Oh, yeah, because Suarez was the other one I was forgetting. So outside of Suarez, my other four finished 2, 3, 4, 6.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had a similar mindset. You know, when I was looking at stage one bets before the race, I was like, okay, who's gonna potentially stay out? Mm-hmm. I was thinking, hopefully, like all the guys that could win, I was thinking, including Bell, are gonna pit. So Denny Hamlin, who's not very good at road courses, he was sitting at 20-1, and then Suarez at 50-1. So those were my two stage one bets. I was too fucking dumb to make the same bets for stage two because they were the same odds. And then Denny Hamlin wins stage two. This race, I ended up, I think I was plus 4.5 units. Like, I shouldn't be complaining. I tweeted afterwards, I'm frustrated with this race because, like, I feel like my analysis was very fucking good for this Circuit of the Americas race.
Same.
Like I said, I was on Bowman all week. I was on Chastain all week. My biggest bet of the week was Chastain top 10. Hit that. Mm-hmm. Like, I should have been happy. Yep. But to be so close with all those, it's just, that's frustrating, and it's NASCAR betting. And
of course,
when you just know that you can be so much better, it is.
Now, my two biggest bets. So one of them was Bowman top 10, 2-1 at FanDuel. I couldn't believe they had a 2-1. So I smashed that. I did have Cindric over Bowman, but I got it like plus 124, and I still liked that. Cindric had a great car. He may have had a car to compete for top five with Bowman there. So I still like my Cindric over Bowman bet. Still like my Cindric top 10. But like lap 2, he smashed his hood in. and the car wasn't.
He pulled
the same
a Cindric.
He pulled a Cindric. But at the same time, if he doesn't do that, right, he has a top five car probably, or borderline top five car. So that sucks because he was moving through the field early on, and you know he charged his way up really quickly, and then just smashed his hood in. And it's like, damn it, dude. Mm-hmm. So it is what it is. Yeah, like I thought my analysis was really good. The other big bet I had was Legacy Motor Club over Rick Ware Racing.
Yes,
and
shout out to
that
Justin
bet,
Haley for having a hell of a race.
No. He cheated. I'm kidding. Yeah. That was one of the worst bets maybe I've ever made, and I got bailed out by the Justin Haley disqualification and the fact that it was Caesars. On Caesars, whereas other books would have scored that as a loss. So I will consider that the luckiest bet I have ever made on NASCAR. I wouldn't say it's the worst bet I've ever made. It wasn't a good one, but it was definitely the luckiest bet I've ever had. And that's part of betting, right? You're never going to be perfect. You're never going to always make positive EV bets, even though you think they may be, and your model may show they will be, right? My model was like, this is super value. And it didn't work out, obviously. Justin Haley, Rick Ware, that was a fantastic drive by them, and they didn't make minimum weight. You see their media asked them for a comment or whatever, and they were like, we didn't make minimum weight.
Yeah, our car was too light.
I was like, yeah, A+ for honesty there.
I took that as we're not going to try to fight this. You know, we're going to take it and go. But a few other surprises or noteworthy things from this race. Bubba Wallace rebounded to finish 15th. You know, he's always had that history of being awful at road courses. He qualified 10th. We don't know what he could have done, but to come back from that early damage and everything and finish 15th, that's a solid run for that team. Something noteworthy the next road course that we go to. And Chase Elliott finishing 16th. You know, we talked about him last week, maybe losing his edge at road courses. There was never a point in this race where I said Chase Elliott can win this thing. And, you know, I saw a clip, I think it was on TikTok, of him basically saying, yeah, this next-gen car, I've lost my edge pretty much everywhere. Still getting used to this car and figuring out how to drive it. And, you know, he's obviously lost his edge at road courses, but, man, he is such a distant third in the Hendrick running order of drivers when it comes to how they're running. Yeah. Like, Byron and Larson are so much better. It's crazy. But
Bowman's had two straight top fives, two straight fourth place finishes. You know,
Bowman's turning it up right now. Speaking of Byron, like I said, 10 wins with this next gen car. I know you and I have disagreed on whether he's the best guy at Hendrick right now, but the fact of the matter is he has 2 wins, 8 wins over the last 40 races. I don't see how anybody cannot consider him a championship favorite. You know, just him, Rudy Fugel, that pairing is so good. You know, they're winning. I don't think enough people are talking about how much William Byron is winning, and he's winning at a bunch of different racetracks too. So, I mean, I like him this week at Richmond, to be honest with you, sitting at 12-1. We'll get to Richmond a little bit later, but I definitely like
him this week.
Yeah. I think, you know, shout out William Byron and that team for, you know, they went on a little cold streak there after their Daytona win, but getting back to victory lane at COTA was good for them. And then Ty Gibbs, you know, honestly, I thought his race was a little disappointing. I kind of expected him to be a little bit faster than that. Obviously still came away with a third place finish, fifth straight top 10 finish for him. I think, was it 4 top 5s in the last 5 races? Like the kids, or 3 top 5s in the last 5 races. That kid, again, yeah, he's one of those where historically you're not going to be talking about him week in and week out, but you need to be because that's how that team's running right now. And obviously we're heading into Richmond, where Joe Gibbs Racing has completely dominated the shit out of everybody. They dominated Phoenix, which is a somewhat similar track to Richmond.
More similar now with the tire wear we saw at Phoenix this year.
Yeah. Yep. Exactly. So, yeah, we'll get to that a little bit later. Anything else from the COTA race that you think is worth talking about?
Yeah, I don't know. I think you mentioned, you know, great recovery by Bubba Wallace. That that team, man, they're snake bit at COTA. Mm-hmm. four COTA races, three DNFs, and then the things that happened this past weekend. And then Daniel Suarez, he had a great car. He made a lot of mistakes. It's going to, he tweeted he made a lot of mistakes, and he did. It's not going to look as good as he was at COTA. So something to keep in mind for, you know, future road courses is Daniel Suarez, solid speed. I wouldn't say like race winning speed, but he had top 10 car, and it didn't work out.
Yeah. And like that was part of my, so I wrote up Suarez as a tournament play for DraftKings in my article this week, simply because one of his flashes of being good at road courses, and then Chastain going out and qualifying sixth and showing the speed that he did, you know, obviously Trackhouse had speed at COTA, and they have over the last 3 years, Trackhouse has had speed there. So, yep, I totally agree. Suarez definitely someone to keep an eye on.
You were underwhelmed by Ty Gibbs. I was too. He's still at the third best, right?
I know. Like, I know.
That's underwhelming. That's pretty darn good. Another, I guess, underwhelming performance was SVG.
He did lose lose first gear.
That's true. When you compare him to Allmendinger, though, even before he lost first gear, it was Allmendinger was just better, flat out better.
And Allmendinger was kind of
in the college like, car, and SVG was in a Trackhouse car.
And Allmendinger, like, he made a couple comments that car wasn't quite, you know, full where it speed. Needed to be. So, yeah, Allmendinger coming away with a sixth place finish in that 13 car, definitely noteworthy. It's something, it'll be something that we have to pay attention to with SVG. And because obviously he's going to be, I mean, he was one of the favorites last week, and rightfully so. I mean, we saw what he did. We've seen what he almost won the Xfinity race. He's obviously very talented, and to still come away with the 20th place finish with no first gear and the issues that I think they had one more issue in that race is still impressive. But, it's one of those opportunities where he could be overvalued by a lot of people and a lot of books, you know, moving forward until he finally, you know, he'll eventually get there. I think, I mean, he's been, from what I've seen in the Xfinity series this year, he's been light years better than I thought he'd be, you know, not just at road courses, but everywhere. So,
Some of it has been luck, but a lot of it has also just been avoiding disaster, which is a skill in itself. Definitely agree with you there.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, moving on to the point standings, Martin Truex Jr., the new leader in the point standings, despite only having one top five finish this year, Ty Gibbs comes into second place. By the way, we talked about it. We did it last week. We bet him live here on the show to make the final four of the playoffs at plus 425. He's down to plus 350 this week.
Yep.
Last year's champion, Ryan Blaney, sitting third in points. Larson dropping to fifth. And, I mean, there's some changes, but nothing wild. Any major surprises for you outside of Gibbs? You know, obviously a lot of people didn't really expect Ty
I don't even
Gibbs
think
to...
Gibbs is a major surprise at this point.
Yeah.
We've got enough races under our belt where the top 14 look like a normal top 14, but then 15th,
Hunter Nemechek.
That's an interesting one. I will say Brad Keselowski making that comeback. I mean, he was down in the 20s after the first two or three races, but a 13th, fourth, and a third. And I know he definitely did not have the result he wanted at COTA, but that's also not a great track for him. So the fact that he's hanging out in 16th after coming off a bad result, I think Brad Keselowski's poised to make a run up the standings as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, John Hunter Nemechek, like we said, he's been avoiding disaster. Two top 10s on the year, but no finish worse than 25th, which is, with the way this season has started for people, is going to get you 15th there in points. Here's another guy that's a little kind of surprising, but not really. Just with how he's been running and improvement from this year, Chase Briscoe sitting 17th in points.
Yep.
Only two finishes worse than 13th this year. He was 31st at Atlanta. He was 21st at Vegas.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, he's had a solid year.
Yep.
And, you know, right behind him, Bubba Wallace has had some bad luck in some of these races. Mm-hmm. So
Joey Logano.
And then Joey Logano's had a lot of bad luck. Like, this is going to be an interesting playoff cutoff this year because obviously we don't think John Hunter Nemechek's going to hold on to this 15th place spot. We think Keselowski will move up. That could move Suarez out of the cut line, meaning we would get a guy, you know, taking a spot away. Like 15th right now, projecting forward, 15th may be the cutoff instead of 16th in the points. And that's right where John Hunter Nemechek is right now. And we have guys like Keselowski, Briscoe, Bubba Wallace, Eric Jones, and of course, Joey Logano on the outside looking in. This is going to get very interesting in a couple months.
Yeah. And I know people are going to say, you know, we're only six races in. Well, guess what? Six races out of the 26 regular season is almost 25%. That's 23% of the regular season's already done. Mm-hmm. So, and we still have Talladega. We still have a second Daytona race. Like, this is, if you're behind now, it's definitely not a great thing. And it's not a good position to be in for someone like Joey Logano, who's, you know, he's 120
points behind
the leader.
Interesting one. Yeah. And here's another interesting one. Chase Elliott. I mean, he's the definition of mid right now. His finish is 14, 15, 12, 19, 8, and 16. Like, he's literally just mid.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's still sitting there ninth. So at least he's been consistently mid, which is enough right now with the way the series is, especially with the next-gen car. Being consistently mid, as long as you avoid trouble, is totally fine.
You know what? There are three things, three totals here that surprise me, and they're all stage points. Ty Gibbs with only 37, Byron mm-hmm. with only 32, and Bell with only 30.
Yep.
And Chastain with only 20.
Yeah.
You know, it's
and
not
Joey
surprising
with only 10.
Yeah. Bowman with only 10 too.
That one surprised me a little less, but yeah.
Who? Which one surprised you with less? Bowman
surprised me a little less. Yeah, he's never really been like a stage monster.
Mm-hmm. I did not realize Chastain was that low though. 20 points through six races is—that's not very good.
It's surprisingly low, yeah.
And to still be sitting there in eighth in points is definitely something to take note of, because you know you just double his stage points and he's leading the points. If you'd be running better earlier in races. So,
yeah. Oh, exactly.
Yeah. Cause like for comparison, you know, I mentioned those totals, like Blaney has 57 stage points this year. Truex has 51. Mm-hmm. And that's a big reason why they are first and third in points. Mm-hmm. So the fact that Gibbs is second in points with only 37 stage points is also, man, that kid is
that shows
good.
How well he's been finishing, of course. Right. Like,
yeah.
If he had 52 stage points, like Truex does, he'd be 10 ahead of him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anything else from these standings that you see noteworthy? Man, I did not realize John Hunter Nemechek was that high. That is.
Yeah, I that's about it. I mean, Joey Logano being that far down and JHN being that high are probably the two biggest surprises, but it's not really a surprise for Logano given he was even further back a couple weeks ago.
And you know what this does? With Logano is I think now people and books are sleeping on him. And when we talk about Richmond, I'm going to talk about bets that I've already put in. I know you've put in some bets. I'm so heavy on Joey Logano this week. It's not even funny, but I don't care because it's Richmond. It's Joey Logano and I'm rolling with it. I don't care if he's running like shit. I'm rolling with it, but we're going to get to Wine About It now, presented by Luvabella Winery. And I'll go first this week. Like I said, I
like it.
I have a couple things that I could talk about. You know, I previously talked about how frustrated I am with myself just this past week because of the potential of that week being so much better. But it was a good week. By the way, I got Purple Rain, my favorite.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
My absolute favorite. If you like Welch's grape juice and you like alcohol, this is the perfect combination.
It's like a combo of those, yeah.
It's because that's what this wine tastes like. It's so good. This is what got me hooked on this company, actually.
Yep.
So I'm going to whine about. Yeah, it's gonna be the broadcast again. I think.
Yeah.
Partially because I forgot the other. My other thing I was potentially going to whine about, and that's annoying. Wow.
Yeah.
Son of a bitch. It's going to come to me.
I have two things I would whine about, so I've got one of them ready to go, but the other one I'm pretty passionate about too. I got a double passion. You know, and passion isn't one of the Luvabella brands or something.
Oh yeah, passion wines.
So I got double passion this week on
yeah.
my my whine about. Because some weeks I'm like, I don't have anything to whine about. But this week, mm-hmm. not only do I have one, which I messaged you about, but I've got another one as well.
Okay. Yeah, I'm going to default to the broadcast. Once again, like I said, I understand that we are different. We are watching these broadcasts. We are watching these races. We are paying attention to a lot of shit that the normal viewer mm-hmm. is not talking about. But
right.
if Fox wants to grab these new people and keep them, you need to make these races understandable. And when they are different and when they are not a typical, you know, driving around in circles race, you need to hit on that. You need to fucking pay attention and understand yep. it. Fox literally needs an intern to sit there and follow the guys that we do on Twitter. So when something happens that the broadcast doesn't catch, they get in their ear and they say, hey, this happened. Make sure you mention it, because it's still mm-hmm. important, because you don't want to all of a sudden be like, what the hell happened to this guy? Cause I'll frequently tweet it out. I'll be like, I said it during this race, I think, with Austin Dillon. I'm like, what the fuck happened to Austin Dillon? And someone was like, I think he spun out or something happened to him. And I'm like, okay, thanks. Like, I had no idea. And it is just, I know Fox, I think they've gotten better. I think Harvick has kind of improved the overall booth. But there are just some things that they are standing on at not changing that they need to analyze. One thing being, they refuse to show the running order the whole first lap. And at a road course, that's 4 minutes, 3 minutes of fucking nothing that you don't know you really don't know what the hell is going on right to start off the race.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the other part of me comes back and says their live running order is wrong half the fucking time anyway. Like, mm-hmm. I think you watched that last three laps of the race and Bell went from 14 seconds back to 2 seconds back. Like, that's another thing I don't understand is how they're fucking, like, their ghost cars and stuff are so off in qualifying and their timing is so off. Fix it. Fucking fix it. It looks so awful. But yeah, that is my whine about it. Fox, once again, do better. Present better.
It was a really bad broadcast. They missed a lot of storylines. They missed a lot of spin outs, all that stuff. But in some ways, I just almost expect it now, you know? Like, and that's where I have other things to distract me. Live betting. You know, talking about it on Discord with the Action Network Discord or whatever. So there's other things that at least help me. Even just going on to NASCAR.com and looking at the lap-by-lap stuff or their live scoreboard thing, whatever it's called, live leaderboard. Like, all that stuff mm-hmm. helps, because then I can really get a little bit extra feel for what's going on. But you're right. For the casual viewer, it doesn't tell enough of what's happening. So I agree with you there. That broadcast was pretty rough.
Yeah, and again, I understand it. It's a road course. It's very difficult to understand what's going on all the time. There's a lot of shit going on. You don't have cameras everywhere. Just do better. That's all I can say to Fox. Do better.
Yep. I agree with you. So I guess it's my turn. And speaking of passion, I actually do have a passion.
There we go. Ooh, that's my favorite.
Luvabella's. And this is the strawberry lemonade.
Have you had this before?
Passion. I have not. And my girlfriend really wants this, so I'm only going to have a little bit. But let me twist the top off here. It's a twist top. I love that.
So good.
So I will pour a little bit into here. See if we can get the ASMR glugs. And let me screw the cap back on. See, this is nice ASMR for all of you. And let's take a sip. So I'm going to have this strawberry lemonade wine. Oh God, that's good. That's incredibly good.
I told you.
Yeah. My girlfriend's gonna love this. It's 10% alcohol by volume. So it's not super high. Like a lot of wines are like 12.5 or even higher. But incredibly good. A+, like phenomenal, phenomenal.
Yep.
It is very good. I highly recommend. So anyway, I have two whine abouts, like I said. I'll start with the second because it kind of ties into your broadcast, but it doesn't completely tie into NASCAR, but Connor Daly has run some NASCAR races. So I'm going to whine about Connor Daly because I'm an IndyCar fan and IndyCar this past week had their all-star race. It's like an exhibition race, $1 million challenge, whatever. And I don't have a problem with the fact that they attempted this. It was at something called Thermal Club, which is a private racetrack for a bunch of rich people who have $5, $10 million homes and, you know, in their own like big gated area or whatever. And it's their own racetrack. And it was very much a B2B event for rich businessmen to schmooze up with IndyCar and see what kind of business deals you can strike, because that'll be good for IndyCar. So I think that's fine. I don't have an issue with the race itself or the attempt at trying it or any of this stuff. What I have an issue with is the broadcast and the way they – right? Because everybody watching it on TV – I shouldn't say everybody. Like 98%, 99%, right? We're catering to the 1% here in the actual track we are at.
Mm-hmm.
But like 99% of us watching on TV are not rich enough to be the target audience of that race. So TV – needs to relate this to TV needs to relate this to the viewer. And it really just on TV became an advertisement for Thermal Club, for being rich, for it just the whole private chefs and all this. Like all of us watching there are like, what are we talking about? Right. So it was bad. But Connor Daly, the part that I'm whining about is Connor Daly says, well, if you didn't like that, you're not a race fan. The fuck are you talking about, Connor Daly? Because we don't like the TV broadcast of them talking about how rich this, rich that, amazing this, $5 million house that, on the whole thing, that suddenly means a guy who's been watching all forms of racing for almost 30 plus, more than 30 years, like almost 40 years, is suddenly not a race fan? I've been watching racing since you were born, Connor Daly. Like, what are you talking about? I've been watching all forms of racing. I'm not just talking me. I speak for everybody else who drives 12 hours to go to a race, watches all sorts of forms of racing, watches every broadcast religiously. We're allowed to give negative feedback if we don't like something. Mm-hmm. Why are you sitting there, Connor Daly, and saying we're not race fans, not real race fans, because we're criticizing a broadcast? We're not criticizing the event itself. We're criticizing the way it was presented to the other 99% of the people that couldn't, you know, be in attendance or aren't that rich and watching it on TV anyway. So it just, it came across as a broadcast that was out of touch on NBC Sports, and that's fine. NBC Sports does typically a great job, especially with IndyCar. They missed this one. But for Connor Daly to come out and say we're not real race fans because we didn't like that, like, It blows my mind, and it pisses me off, frankly. And there's I don't have a good thing to say about that. And the other thing that bothers me is people come out of the woodwork and they're like, well, Connor Daly, look at his track record. He sucks. Why should we pay attention? Don't do that. I like Connor Daly. I don't think he's the best race car driver in the world, but I think he's a good one. He's had chances to win the Indy 500. That means you're pretty good, especially in the equipment he's been in. He hasn't been in the best equipment in the world. So don't go out attacking Connor Daly for being a poor race car driver or whatever personal attacks. Attack him for, I shouldn't say even attack him, but just rebut him on what he said, that we're not real race fans. That's what angers me about what Connor Daly said. It's not his racing record. It's not who he is as a person. None of that. So there's that side of the story as well, where I'm not mad at Connor Daly. I'm not, he's a horrible person. He's a horrible race car. I don't care about any of that. I'm just saying your point, Connor Daly, about we're not real race fans offends me. It pisses me off because there is not like arguably, and obviously I'm biased, there may not be a bigger IndyCar fan on the planet than me. I've been an IndyCar fan since I was forever, like a kid, like I can't even explain it. And I'm not saying there aren't other bigger IndyCar fans than me. I'm obviously biased in my own point of view. And I see Twitter and there's tons of absolutely obsessed IndyCar fans. I'm not putting any of them down. I'm just saying there's a lot of us that are absolutely obsessed with IndyCar, with NASCAR, with any form of racing we see. And to say we're not real racing fans makes me mad.
Yeah. And it's just a weird thing to come out and say. Like, that's just a lot of getting caught up in your own shit and not realizing the whole entirety of the situation and what people are actually complaining about. So, yeah, that's weird. I didn't see it, but that's weird from what you're describing.
Yeah. So that's whine about it, number one. And then whine about it, number two, is Corey LaJoy. So Corey LaJoy, obviously he got in that lap one or whatever it is, lap one or two wreck, really early wreck, where he and Bubba Wallace and Martin Truex Jr. all got some damage. And on his podcast, Stacking Pennies, which our podcast was Stacking Denny's was a joke on the time when Corey LaJoy and Denny Hamlin had a little bit of a rivalry. And so we made it Stacking Denny's because it was pretty funny.
For those that don't know, that's the history of this show.
Yeah, exactly. You're looking for a name, and it came to me because that was the rivalry, and Corey LaJoy just started his Stacking Pennies podcast, and it was just funny. You were back then super anti-Denny.
yep.
But so Corey LaJoy goes on his Stacking Pennies podcast and basically gives every excuse under the sun as to why that wreck happened. And you hear him almost blame, I wouldn't say exactly blame Denny Hamlin, but, oh, well, Denny didn't give me room. Denny Hamlin never touches Corey LaJoy. Corey LaJoy never goes in the grass other than maybe trying to get back onto the track. So for whatever reason, he's like blaming Denny for passing him, running near him. I don't even know. Like, and then he blames Bubba Wallace for racing inside of Martin Truex Jr., who was inside of Corey LaJoy three wide. Like, he won't accept responsibility for his mistake of cutting across the track, across Martin Truex Jr.'s nose into Bubba Wallace. Like, you could definitely have come back on the track. There was room for you to come back on the track without cutting across Martin Truex Jr.'s nose.
Yeah.
And it's just, man, it's just one of those things where you literally just come all the way across the track. Nobody's touching you, and you're blaming Bubba or Truex or Hamlin, anyone or whatever. Everyone. Like, yeah, everyone and everyone except yourself.
Yeah, and honestly, like, you looking at the replay, it looks like just LaJoy's spotter didn't clear him, and he just decided to try to get back in line. Like, lose a couple of positions and don't destroy your car and other people's cars on lap one. Like, yeah, I didn't hear. And when you told me about it, I was like, well, maybe I was thinking initially, I was like, well, maybe LaJoy didn't see the replay. But if he said it on the podcast, there's no way he didn't see the replay. That's such a bad take on his part. I don't see how that's anybody's fault but his. You know, he was obviously slow enough that they got underneath him in the corner, and then he got pushed off the track. Like, that's
I'm trying to do better. Like, in the first part, like the Denny Hamlin part makes absolutely no sense.
No, unless there was something like well before that replay, which I don't think there was.
Like, it's just unbelievably, just wow. Just do you ever take fault for anything, Corey LaJoy? Because that was easily the most fault was yours. Maybe like 5% of the blame is on Truex and Bubba for, you know, maybe they both need to move down because maybe you barely only have enough room to get on the track. Maybe, right? Like, I'm trying to be benefit of the doubt here. But to blame Denny Hamlin for any of that is like the absolute most ridiculous thing.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you 100%. Just weird.
Yeah.
But that is what it is. Everyone has their opinions, I guess.
So that's my wine about it. Presented by Lubabella Wines. Make sure you try all their brands. I had the passion brand of the strawberry lemonade, and Jordan had the good old classic purple rain.
The best. Old Faithful. But yeah,
I would call that their flagship wine, right?
I believe so, yeah. Yeah. But yeah, that's going to do it for Wine About It, and that's going to get us on to Richmond and the Toyota Owners 400 Sunday night race. Easter Sunday night race. We have not yet had a night race at Richmond with this next-gen car. We've had four races here with this next-gen car, four different winners. actually over the last, I believe, 7 Richmond races, we have had 7 different winners. Now, chances are we're probably going to get a repeat winner this weekend. Looking at the boards, Christopher Bell and Denny Hamlin are the favorites. Of course, Truex is up there. Ty Gibbs, you know, he's pretty much a staple as a favorite this year. And we got Larson, Byron, Buescher, Keselowski.
Yep.
Buescher and Keselowski opened really long on Caesars and quickly got bet down. I think Buescher opened at 25 and Kez opened at 30. Buescher down to 12.
I think Ty opened at 20 and got bet down to 8.
Did he?
Yeah.
But first, I want to talk about the fact that this is a night race. How and it, does that change anything? One thing to note this weekend is practice and qualifying is being done Saturday morning at 10 a.m. And then the race, actual race itself, isn't going to get started on Sunday until, I believe, 7:45. Yeah. Does that change anything in regards to our analysis this week and what we need to look at? Because, like I said, we have not had a night race at Richmond with this car.
I don't think so, because, you know, Richmond's track is so old, so abrasive. The tires are going to wear regardless if it's in the day or at night. That is about abrasiveness, and that abrasiveness isn't going to change in warmer temperatures or cool temperatures. So I don't think so. I don't think it changes a ton, right? We're still going to get a lot of tire wear. The only thing it may make is, you know, a little easier handling on the car, but that still isn't going to really affect passing if there's a lot of difference on your, you know, if you have a newer tires than the other guy, you're going to still be able to pass them. That's just how Richmond is. That's how high tire wear tracks are. And based off what we saw at Phoenix, right? If we're bringing a similar tire and package and all that stuff, all of a sudden, are we getting even more tire wear at Richmond? So pretty interesting to think about.
Yeah, there's going to be a ton of fall off this week at Richmond. And there's going to be different strategies once again, just like we kind of saw at COTA, because some teams will pit an extra time at Richmond and make all that time up. Like this, that's how big of a difference these tires make at Richmond, because there's so much fall off. Are you worried at all about another mishap like Bristol happening, where tire wear is so extreme that we see, you know, extreme tire wear during the race? Because one of the theories about Bristol was that it was colder temperatures that caused that. Could we see that this weekend at Richmond? And obviously, we're not tire experts. We can't sit here and say it's going to happen or not. But it's just something to keep in mind, I think.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it would be colder temperatures. I think it was warmer temperatures because Bristol was in the day, right? Like, instead of at night. I don't know.
I thought they said it was because colder temperatures.
I thought it had to do with the rest. I thought Dr. DeAndra said the temperatures were pretty much similar. And I think it had more to do with the resin. I don't know. I have no idea, honestly, as far as the temperature in Bristol. I have no idea as far as the temperature affecting the Richmond tires. What I do know is there's probably a lot to learn from Bristol, and also a very different situation because Bristol's high loads, right? Like, we're talking high loads, high banking, cambers and casters and all these things. Tire pressures could affect all that. And all that stuff is probably off simply because of some of these other things. So I don't necessarily think we'll see that as much at Richmond, but it doesn't mean we will or won't either way. I just don't know. But what I do know is we'd be able to figure that all that out if we had a long practice session.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So looking at the races here last year, Kyle Larson won in the spring, led 93 of the 400 laps. And then Chris Buescher won the race in the fall, despite starting back in 26th, finished second in stage two, and then, led 88 laps. Keselowski led 102 laps in that race. But here's the thing about Richard.
By the way, hold on. I just have to interrupt here for an important announcement. Jizzle James just hit his full points ladder. So for those of you who don't know, I do a lot of college basketball as well, and I've been crushing the player props this year during the tournament. I have an NIT bet, and the game's on right now. I was like, Jordan's talking, I'm flipping over to the game on my monitor here, and I had Jizzle James over 13 and a half points, all the way up to 20 plus points, and he just got 21. So had to make that important announcement. Thank you, Jizzle.
That's awesome. Yeah, if you aren't following Nick in the Action app, make sure you are. He's absolutely killing it in basketball props this year. Just insane. Every week, every day I open that app and Nick's once again in the green. So make sure you follow him for all basketball bets as well as NASCAR bets there. Getting back to Richmond, here's the thing about Richmond. A lot of tire wear, a lot of stuff can happen. But we see the same guys up front pretty much every single time. Denny Hamlin, always up front. Christopher Bell, always up front. Martin Truex Jr., always up front. Joey Logano, typically up front. Kevin Harvick was always very good here. You look at the last six races at Richmond. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 drivers have 5 top tens. Kyle Busch, Kevin Harvick, Joey Logano, Christopher Bell, Martin Truex Jr., Denny Hamlin. You know who's not good at Richmond? Surprisingly. That we can't Blaney. Figure out. We cannot figure this out whatsoever, but Ryan Blaney is not good at Richmond Raceway, and I will forever fade Ryan Blaney until he proves me wrong. Ryan Blaney has improved at Richmond. He qualified well here back in 2022.
Peanut butter stout's really good, but I just choked on it. By the way, shout-outs to we didn't say this, the Brew Kettle as well.
The Brew Kettle, so, yes. Forgot about that. Typically, one of us has one of the beers.
I didn't have a chance to mute my mic there either, so I tried to get away from the microphone. But, yeah, sorry, my bad. Keep going on Ryan Blaney.
Yeah, so Ryan Blaney, he started on the pole here April 2022, led 128 races, and we all thought, hey, maybe he finally has this track figured out. Ended up finishing 5th or 7th, likely due to his pole position start. Fact of the matter is Ryan Blaney, for whatever reason, because he is very good at Phoenix, which, like we said, is if these tracks did not have such different tire wear issues, they're quite similar in shape and in banking. Mm-hmm. That is Ryan Blaney's only finish better than 10th in his career here. He only has 3 top 10s in 15 starts here. For whatever reason, Ryan Blaney is not good at Richmond. And that is why I'm so against Ryan Blaney this week. Again, Blaney, I'm begging you to prove me wrong. Actually not, because I'm going to be so pissed off when you do. If you don't remember, Ryan Blaney is on my forever dead to me list after Martinsville 2 years ago when I bet him, biggest bet of my life on him, top 10, and he finished 11th. But this week already, I bet Chris Buescher over Blaney minus 115. I think you're on that as well, Nick. And then I just bet Joey Logano minus 114 over Blaney as well. 15 races here for Ryan Blaney. Joey Logano has finished better than him 14 times.
Yep.
If you want any reason for my bets there,
no, there it is. I love both of those, the Chris Buescher and the Joey Logano over Blaney. Can Blaney have a good finish here? Obviously, he's done it before. It doesn't mean it's the most likely outcome. So love both of those bets, Buescher over Blaney, which I was able to get, and Logano over Blaney, which I have not seen yet. I'm sure it's wherever you got it. I'm sure I'll be able to get it at some point here.
Mm-hmm. What my other favorite bet this week, Joey Logano, top 10 finish plus 120. I'm in for quite a bit on that. I'm not going to lie. A little bit scared because of the bad luck that he's been having this year, but Joey Logano is so good at Richmond. 6 top 7 finishes in the last 7 races here. Like, he's great here. Mm-hmm. If I need to recommend one bet to everybody this week, Joey Logano, top 10 plus 120. Grab it. I don't think you're going to get better.
But I like
it. It's not.
It's not my favorite bet, but I like it.
What's your favorite bet? Because I know you have a couple as well. And I walked in. I'll be honest with you. I woke up today, and I was like, I was kind of thinking about betting Byron outright. I still probably might. But I wasn't really finding anything. Then I started looking at top 10s. I started looking at head-to-heads, and I'm like, shit, there's a lot of stuff I like out here. It's time to bet. What are your favorite bets this week? Early bets. You know, these are all pre-qualifying, pre-practice.
Yeah, I'm going to go to the guy who finished at this racetrack on this very race last year in 6th position. Mm-hmm. And then earlier this year, he finished.
Interesting.
Finished 8th at Phoenix. My favorite bet is his finishing position under 20 and a half at Caesars. I bet it at 22.5. I bet it down to 21.5. I bet it down to 20.5. So I've got a lot of money on this at 22.5 and 21.5. I've stopped there to let you all have the rest at 20.5.
What pisses me off, and by the way, he's talking about Michael McDowell.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who,
and even again, better, now we're a handful of races into the tier one equipment, right? So more learning with this Penske alliance, with this tier one Ford. I shouldn't say alliance, but attention.
Yeah. And yeah, if you remember back to Phoenix, he was one of those I was going to smash the under on his 21.5 finishing position, and I didn't because I chickened out. Like you said, he finished eighth. Oh, well. If I could find the fucking this should have been my line about it. If I could find the fucking finishing position props on Caesars, I'd bet them. I can't fucking find them. I spent 10 minutes earlier trying to find the fucking things because I saw Greg Mathurin, he tracked Eric Jones under 25.5 or something. I'm like, oh,
yeah,
I'll go bet that. I couldn't find them. I looked on desktop. I looked on my app. I cannot find them. Fuck you, Caesars, for making your app completely. It's one of my friends texted me last week before COTA because I said, hey, Clint Boyer's special bet with Reddick top five, Bowman and Chastain top 10. It was like plus 800 or something. He's like, I was like, hey, I like this bet. I think you should bet it. And he's like, do they not want us to bet it? Or why the fuck can't I find anything on this app? And I'm like, exactly. Like,
yeah,
I understand that there's a lot of offerings, but holy shit. Some of these apps need to, like DraftKings, for as much as they suck, it's very easy to find all their shit.
Yeah.
Same with like Bet365. I don't have an issue finding stuff at Bet365, but Caesars, God, it is awful.
Yeah. They need a little bit of a redesign there for sure. But, you know, at some point you just get used to knowing where that shit is, right? So I've already known if I'm going to look at stage bets, if I'm going to look at finishing position bets, I have to just go through that convoluted process because this is like the third or fourth time this year. At this point, I just know what to do. So at some point, it becomes on us to just know that that's where we need to go, is do that same fucking process, you know.
But I did that, and I still can't find it.
Right, right. I'm saying for me, because I've done it so many times, it's just second nature to me. So for somebody, like you haven't done it yet, it's super easy. I'll direct it to you later, but obviously we're recording now, so I can't. But it's one of those things.
One thing that did catch my eye, number of Toyotas in the top 10, 3.5. Is the line.
Yeah.
And it's not super bet. Like it's minus 114 on both sides. Oops.
Yeah. It's 50-50 on each way when you remove the juice.
A couple other top 10 bets, which by the way, like if you followed me last year, top 10 bets were my bread and butter last year. They're my favorite bets to make. I like them a lot. Austin Dillon plus 460. I like that.
Where's sitting plus 460?
Fanatics.
Oh, Fanatics. Richmond. Yeah, but see, you know, like five people have Fanatics.
Well, I'm still going to grab it because I have Fanatics.
No, I know. I know. But, I'm just saying. Like that's why I don't know where it is because five people have it. If you have Bet 365, if you have Bet 365, it's 4-1. I already bet that.
Yeah. Yep. Same. I bet it on 365, and then I went and bet on Fanatics too once I saw it was better. But Austin Dillon, I feel like they're sleeping on him. Like obviously that car has been junk this year, but Richmond is his best racetrack. Top 11 finishes in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 of the last 10 races here. So, and I think he was in position to get one here last spring, and something happened, if I remember right. But he did finish 9th here last fall, and then I had to sprinkle some on Gilly Gang, 28-1 opened at Bet365. Here's the thing. Gillen won, finished 15th in this race last year, and his last three starting positions at Richmond, 16th, 13th, and 16th. Mm. If you qualify that well and you get a couple lucky breaks, you can find yourself in the top 10 at the end. I mean, we saw Josh Berry finish second here last year, not having a second place car. So, I 28-1, I could not believe it. And you pointed this one out to me. Our boy Daniel Hemric sitting at 40-1 for a top 10 finish, getting priced down there by the shit boxes. Is that worth a bet though? You know, like in a crazy world, does he somehow sneak into a top 10 at more than one every 2.5 races?
I would say probably not. To be fair, you know, in 2019 when he raced for Richard Childress Racing, he had a 19th and 25th. But now he's with Colley.
Yep.
That team's worse than RCR, even than RCR was in 2019. And Richmond just doesn't throw up chaos.
Right.
Just doesn't. So
I don't think so. That was one line. If you are rooting for someone to have a mechanical issue, or like if you want to root for someone having a mechanical issue or there to be an early wreck, the number of drivers to complete less than 200 laps is set at 0.5, with the over being at plus 150. So you need one driver to have an issue in the first half of the race, or like, yeah, pretty much in the first half of the race. I thought that was an interesting line. I'm not going to bet it because I went back and looked, and I think it's happened like once in the last however many Richmond races. But that's begging to be bet at plus 150, I feel like. Because all it takes is like literally one freaking blown tire or something.
Yep. Yeah, I don't hate the over on that. I don't hate it. I'm not betting it myself, but I don't hate it.
Mm-hmm. Going back to these outrights, though, you know, obviously we both talked about William Byron. I do like that at 12-1. I'm going to end up betting it. I know I am. It's available at Caesars at 12-1. I think I saw it somewhere else at 12-1 as well. Anything else sticking out to you outright wise? You know, I think Christopher Bell, Denny Hamlin are too short to bet. Truex is available at 7-1. Any interest? That kind of surprises me because he has quite the history here at Richmond. Any interest in Truex this weekend?
Yeah, Truex is one of the first guys I wanted to look at, and he never was longer than 7. So I can't get there at 7, 8 or 9, mm-hmm. maybe.
Yeah,
but I can't get there at 7.
Yeah, you look at him. He's led 50 or more laps here in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 of the last 12 races. Nope, 10 of the last or 9 of the last 12 races here. Like I said, Joe Gibbs Racing. Fully expect them to be the dominant team once again, correct?
Yeah. I don't see any reason not to expect Joe Gibbs Racing to be the dominant team, or Toyota, right? You know, because Eric Jones and Jonathan Hamrick are both really good at Richmond. Obviously, 23-11 as well. There's no reason after what we saw at Phoenix to expect any, and this has already been a JGR track with some Hendrick and some Penske mixed in, namely Logano for Penske, and then RFK, right? So it's going to be all those, but clearly... Yep. Clearly, Toyota / Joe Gibbs Racing especially is going to probably be the dominant team here.
Mm-hmm. And here's the thing. We're on a bit of a streak here, you know, since Daytona, since Atlanta. After Atlanta, these last four races, Vegas, Phoenix, Bristol, Coda, the favorites are winning. Mm-hmm. Larson was a favorite at Las Vegas, at Phoenix. Who won Phoenix? Christopher Bell, you know, after practice and qualifying, Christopher Bell was the favorite. Bristol, Hamlin was the favorite. And then after practice and qualifying, Byron was one of the co-favorites with Gibbs and Reddick last weekend. You know, he was down to 4-1 once at the start of that race, which I couldn't bet 4-1, too short for me, but, the favorites are winning right now. That doesn't mean there's not value on the betting board. However, do you see some of these longer shot guys actually having a chance, or is it, you know, and I'm talking, let's put the mark at 20 to 1 or longer.
Yeah.
So we're talking Cobb. Yeah.
I do.
Who you like?
Why not Michael McDowell? Why not Michael McDowell? 125-1.
You're all in on Michael McDowell this week, aren't you?
Why not Ryan Preece? 125-1.
Uh-huh.
Or any and of that's another Stewart or any of these Stewart Haas car, right? Josh Berry, Noah Gregson, right? These guys are good at this track and they had top 10 speed, some of them at Phoenix.
Mm-hmm.
Why not? Right? All you need is a late restart.
Yep.
Hang out in what the top 10 and then a late restart.
What do you think about this? Is the one that popped off to me. I wasn't getting quite down to those guys in the 100 range, but there's one guy. He won here in 2021. He's finished 8th in the last 2 spring races at Richmond. Alex Bowman sitting at 60-1.
Yeah.
That's one I could see myself sprinkling on.
I don't hate
especially
that
with how that. Yeah. And I wish his top 10
odds again, it's the same situation, though. It's the same situation, though, right? Like, he's a guy who can run in the top 10. And how he won Richmond was a late restart, right? Yep. That was his win. Yep. Like, he was nowhere near the best car, but he got underneath those guys on a late restart. And I think he actually only, like, he led 10 laps. I think a lot of it was strategy shit. And then right at the end, he led, I'm scrolling down here. Yeah, he led 391 to 400, literally the last 10 laps because of the late restart. And that was it. And that's all it takes, right? If Michael McDowell's sitting there in fifth on a late restart and he's able to have an amazing restart or something happens with the front row and they get all wiggle-waggled up, that's what I'm talking about. But I'd almost rather have Michael McDowell at 125 than Bowman at 60 because that's the only way those two guys are winning.
Yeah.
So just give me the longer price. And I'm not saying I disagree with Bowman at 60. I'm just saying if I had to pick something, I might pick a McDowell or a Priest, right? Because Priest finished fifth in the most recent Richmond race. And he was on strategy up there for Phoenix for a good while and looked really fast. He just had some other things happen at various points in that race. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. One thing to note, you know, we said Joe Gibbs Racing likely to dominate this race once again. Same with Toyota. We also have to include 2311, you know, Tyler Reddick, Bubba Wallace. Reddick was very strong here last year. No reason for him not to be. Again, though, going back to Phoenix a little bit, and guys that showed really good speed that we still have some question marks for, and you mentioned a couple of them earlier. Gregson was very good at Phoenix. Briscoe obviously came away with that ninth place finish. You know, Ryan Preece, Josh Berry, we've seen those guys perform better than expected last year in SHR equipment. What are your expectations for SHR heading into this race? Because this is another one of those tracks. This is where they've been good at. This is where Eric Almirola, Kevin Harvick were always good at. It was Richmond, Phoenix, these short flat tracks. And now you have these younger guys that typically, you know, you're not thinking of them on race weekends, but now we're getting to these tracks where we should. Do you think they have the same upside kind of that we were thinking they had at Phoenix this weekend?
Yeah, I don't see any reason not to. I think they can reasonably expect to place a driver in the top 10 and a couple near the top 10, you know, top 15, whatever. So certainly I think that's what their expectation should be. I don't think they're going out there expecting to win. I think, like I said, given a similar situation to what happened to Bowman, can they win? Sure. Right. We saw last year, for example, Josh Berry, when he was filling in for Elliott, finished second on the weird late restart strategy stuff. Like, those things are possible for Stuart Haas Racing. Do we expect that second place or third place? No, but certainly possible. And I do expect at least one of them to be around the top 10, at least a few of them to be in the top 15 or 16 or so.
I must have blocked the summer race at Richmond last year out of my memory. I forgot that Bubba led 80 laps in that race. Reddick led 81. The guy with the sixth best driver rating in that race and a fifth place finish was Ryan Preece.
Yep.
So that wasn't a fluke. That was an actual run. Exactly. That was in that 41 Stuart Haas car. Okay. What sucks is that their top 10 odds and stuff aren't, like, they're too short. Even, like, I can bet them, but I wish they were back to where they were at Phoenix. Because if you remember, they were, like, in that 7 range. That'd be all, like, I'd be all over them if they were in that range this time. Right now, Gregson's sitting at 3-1. And so is everybody else.
Yep.
Yeah, Priest is at plus 350. Barry's at plus 225. Briscoe plus 225.
At Bet365, I think Priest was 4-1, and Gregson's 4-1. I think that's what it was. So, yeah, I like Gregson and Priest and all those guys on their T10 prices. If you can get them 4-1 or so.
Outside, are there any other similar tracks that you're looking at this week outside of, you know, the other short flat tracks? Are we looking at other high wear tracks this week to kind of add in the aspect of this tire wear at Richmond, or are we just focusing on
what
Richmond?
Other high tire wear tracks are there? I mean, like Darlington and Homestead.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not really looking at high banked tire wear. I will say, like, some drivers are good at tire wear, are good at high tire wear, right? And
right.
I look at a guy like Alex Bowman, most of his wins come in high tire wear tracks. So there's that. But no, I'm not really. I'm looking at short flat. I'm looking at Phoenix, especially given this year, Phoenix, especially given the higher tire wear, but just overall, like short flat, what teams have been good here, etc. Not weighing Darlington into Richmond. I will say I don't hate weighing Bristol into Richmond a little bit because, and I don't love the whole like short track thing because short tracks are so dear. Like Bristol and Martinsville are not the same at all. I hate when people compare Bristol and Martinsville. Like, I absolutely hate it. But I don't hate comparing Bristol to Richmond because of Bristol's highest correlated tracks in terms of what we see in the data. It's Dover and Richmond, weirdly enough. Mm. And now add in the extra tire where we saw Bristol this year. And it's like, sure. And I think the reason Bristol, Richmond correlates a lot with Bristol from the Bristol perspective, not from the Richmond perspective, is just the different lines that you can take at Richmond and how it moves around. Similar with Dover, right? Like the line will move around. And that's why we've always seen it correlate with Bristol from the Bristol perspective. But from the Richmond perspective, Phoenix, obviously. New Hampshire, right? A little bit of Martinsville, I guess. But I do think this time maybe you can pull in a little bit of Bristol just because of the higher tire wear. And there is the other way correlation where from Bristol's perspective, Richmond is one of the more comparable tracks.
Mm-hmm. Other than that, let's talk about guys that are like bad at Richmond. You know, we talked about Blaney, not good at Richmond. Daniel Suarez is another guy that just doesn't seem to have this track figured out. You know, with Gibbs, he had a top 10 finish. With Stuart Haas, he had a top 10 finish. Since then, he has not been able to crack the top 15. Last four races here in this next gen car, 33rd, 23rd, 19th, and 16th. Driver ratings aren't indicative of, you know, having a good car at all. Corey LaJoie is another guy that, you know, often thought of as a sleeper for fantasy purposes at certain tracks, has been garbage here in his career. He did have a 21st place finish in the spring last season. That's his best run by far. His driver rating was still 47.7 in that race, so obviously not very good, especially considering he started 16th. A few other guys that are not good at this racetrack. AJ Allmendinger is not racing the 16. Ty Dillon is running the 16 this weekend. He did have a 17th place finish here in 2022, but overall garbage here. Plus, he's in that college car, so we know he's garbage.
Surprising that, you know, Ty Dillon's garbage, given Austin Dillon's pretty good here.
Yeah, right? They should be the exact same racer. Mm-hmm. That's another one of those that I haven't figured out is how Austin Dillon is so good here. Because Richmond's often thought of as a racer's racetrack, and I don't think Austin Dillon's a very good racer. So the fact that he can – I mean, he legitimately could have won this race a few years ago. Mm-hmm. And like I said, like constant actual top 10 threat.
Yeah.
Another one that's just weird. Richmond is weird. What do you think the chances are this week of major surprises?
Maybe like 3%.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's where I'm at too.
3 to 5%, I would say. Probably closer to 3.
What do we think of? I didn't realize. I'm just looking through some of these guys' stats quick here. I did not realize that Kyle Busch was so consistent here with top tens. Holy shit! Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it's a good track. Ninth or better in 11 of the last 12 races here. His top 10 odds on 365 are -130. I just feel like there's so much value out here. I want to bet everything, you know. And obviously, you can't bet every top 10 out there. That'd be dumb, but. Mm-hmm. I do feel like there's a lot of value out there.
Yeah. No, I think there's a lot of value out here. Richmond certainly. The problem is when you say there's a lot of value out there, that means you think there's a lot of drivers that are good and they can't all be good today or this weekend.
Yep, exactly. Right?
They can't. Yep. So that's the other issue. If you like 15 guys for a top 10, well, only 10 of them can actually top 10 at most.
Mm-hmm. Yep. You got anything else? I kind of went through my points.
No, I don't have a lot to add. I think we're all on the same guys, which, you know, makes it obvious. And I think, you know, Bubba Wallace leading 80 laps at Richmond is certainly notable. If we want to talk about another guy longer than 20, probably him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's sitting there right now at 45-1 on Caesars.
Ah, 45 I think that's worth... at Caesars? Yeah, I'm betting that. Betting that. Yep. I'm in.
In?
I'll track it after nice. The I'll track it after the show, but I'm betting Bubba 45-1 at Caesars.
Man, I can't stop looking at Bowman 60-1. I cannot believe he's 60-1. That is.
Yeah, but Bowman doesn't lead here. Bubba does, apparently.
Yeah, right.
Right. And, so. Like,
and you know, obviously Bubba's track record here isn't great, but it's also the Toyota aspect of it. Like, Toyota mm-hmm. is fucking fast. And if you're fast, you're much likely much more likely to get track position, all that. So that was actually a question we got on Twitter. Through seven races, actually it's six races, but do you still believe Toyota is the team to beat? Who's your favorite long shot? I think it's very clear that Toyota's the team to beat. They are. 100% and I don't see again. Toyota. And typically we don't see anybody catch up or make gains until about race 12. So I fully expect, for the most part, Toyota to be the team to beat for the next month or two.
And look, and then Toyota's and then minus 125. If you look at winning manufacturer, they're minus 125 and they only have eight cars. Of course they're the team to beat.
Yeah.
Or the, I should say, the manufacturer to beat.
Yeah. All right. So you're locking in Bubba Wallace at 65 or 45-1.
Mm-hmm. I love it.
How do you feel? I still really like Logano. He's sitting at 22-1. I don't know if I can pull that trigger, but I don't hate it. I'm so high on Logano this week. Like, this is going to bite me in the ass. I know
it. 22-1. I do like 22-1. Damn it, man. Why is there so much to like this week? That's not good. I feel like this is one of those, right? We like a lot of things, but why don't we just save some of that for live betting and then see who is actually good or post-practice qualifying, right?
Exactly. Yeah, because you always want to get on stuff early.
The best number, But I feel like Bubba is one of those where 45-1, we're not going to see all week.
No. If he goes out and qualifies well, no, it's gone. Same with Byron. I don't think we see 12 after practice qualifying.
I disagree. I think he could practice mediocre and qualify mediocre, and we'll see 16.
You think?
Yeah.
That would...
I actually completely disagree on that. Byron opened at like 14 or something, or 16 at like Westgate. So, yeah, I actually think he could go the other way.
I don't know. Like, the last two spring races here, he's led over 100 laps each race.
I get that. I'm just saying, with what Toyota has done so far this year, how good they've been at specifically Richmond as well. Plus, Byron led a lot of that on strategy. The race that he won, both Martin Truex Jr. and, or it was Denny Hamlin and Martin Truex Jr. were like catching him on, there were like three different strategies, and Byron somehow happened to work and
Byron
won
didn't win
or whatever.
Race here. But, Byron's never
okay. The one he finished second or third or fourth, whatever the hell it was.
Oh, okay.
He led like 100 laps just based off the fact that he had this weird bullshit strategy.
Yeah. That's another thing that always fucks me at Richmond. I remember that well, cause I was in Texas for WrestleMania, and my DFS lineups looked fucking amazing. This always happens at Richmond. My DFS lineups look amazing for the first half of the race, and then all the strategy comes in and I get fucked every single time. This is why I hate Richmond. I love it, but I hate it. I remember that.
What happened is Byron was going to do a two-stop strategy, right? So a lot of people do two stops and split it into thirds, or do one stop and split it in half. Byron pitted one third of the way through that final stage, and then he never made the second pit stop. So it was a two-stop that they audibled to a one stop. So he led 100 plus laps just from being the only driver that hadn't pitted, essentially. Cause he had those, he pitted early, which means he had amazingly fresh tires. So when the two stoppers pitted, Byron had made up a whole bunch of laps on them on like crazy good tires while they were on worn tires. And so he was like half a lap or a lap ahead of everybody. even the other one stoppers. So it was just like a weird dynamic where he didn't really lead those on speed. It's not like he was bad. He just didn't really lead those because off of like merit.
Right. Yeah, I remember that race. Yeah, Hamlin won it, led the last five laps, and that was
it. Harvick should have won it, I think it was. And
yep.
And then like Truex also was on one of those strategies, I think it was. So it was a weird race, but
mm-hmm. Yeah, I was in Texas for WrestleMania.
I think it was the first Richmond race last year. Yeah, that's what it was.
2022.
Yeah, sorry, 2022 is what I meant. Yep.
Yep. Yeah. All right. Anything else for Richmond?
Nope.
Nope. Okay. Nope. We're gonna get to our picks to win then. And 36 for 36. Let's see here. Let's go to the picks to win. Last week I had Reddick. I was hoping to get that first win of the season. Did not get it. Did get a fifth place finish though, so I'll take that. That is four straight races for me with a sixth or better place finish with my pick to win. You had Truex, ended up with 10th, so you still have not picked anyone worse than 16th. You have avoided disaster this year. Obviously, you had Byron and the Daytona 500 for the first win. Overall average so far, your picks 8.7, mine 9.8. So we're not doing awful.
That's pretty darn good. Honestly, that's pretty darn good.
That is. So who you got this week? I'll let you go first.
Pick to win. I'm going to go back to back here. Martin Truex Jr.
Martin Truex Jr., I like that.
2 weeks in a row, let's go Truex.
Yep. Should I go 2 weeks in a row, Reddick?
It's up to you, man.
I want to go Byron. But let me think. Could this be the first week that we go same guy? Do I want to do that?
Maybe.
It'd be the first time ever. No, I'm going Hamlin. Sorry for going chalk here, but I'm going Hamlin.
I went chalk too. I mean, Truex is still chalk.
Yeah, Hamlin, second or first in four of the last six Richmond races. So good here. Same with Truex. Same with Bell.
Is Truex an auto owners? I don't know.
Ooh. Right, look at that. If he is, no then you just I'll just mark one here for you right now.
Exactly. I don't pay attention to any of that stuff, but
he is. Fuck, he is.
Oh, let's go.
Oh man. Yeah, Truex in the auto owner's insurance car. Mark, chalk it up. Bet him right now. No, I'm just kidding. But for real. There's just something about that paint scheme that gets it done. It's probably because they run it at the tracks that he races the best at, but I'm still sticking to my theory that it's the actual car. But looking at 36 for 36, I had fucking Cindric last week. 26 points.
Honestly,
there.
That's 26 points for what happened to him is not bad.
Yeah, I can't fully complain, but I'm going to because fucking Cindric on lap 7. But you had Reddick earned 34 points,
which
and you get to go
feels
first.
Feels low for a Reddick Coda race.
Yeah. You know? Yep. Yep.
But part of that is the stage points. He did both, pitted on both stages. So that's a little bit of that right there.
Yep. So you get to go first this week.
Cindric ended up staying out because of his damage, which helped him in stage one get the stage points.
Yeah, you're right.
Sorry, go ahead.
you get to go first this week with 36 for 36, which thankfully, because I haven't really thought about this at all on who I'm going to pick. I have someone in my mind right now. It's probably going to be who I land on, but I'm very interested to hear your strategy with Richmond this week.
Yeah, I mean, I am pretty interested in Joey Logano. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to lie. Even though I don't think he's my favorite bet of the week, this is definitely one of his best tracks. When we look at Joey Logano, like you think of his best tracks. What are his best tracks? I don't know. So this probably is one of them.
Richmond, Gateway.
Yeah, obviously
and Gateway. Gateway is very.
Yep. So he is definitely in consideration, but I'm going to go with Austin Dillon, who's been the guy I want to pick all week. So yeah, that's smart. Just going to Austin Dillon.
I don't hate that at all. Now you got me thinking. I might go Logano. Like, if I'm already all in on Logano this week, I feel like I should just go all in here. My other choice, what I was initially thinking, Ryan Preece.
Mm-hmm.
Feel like there might not be another chance to really use him. So this comes down to whether I want to get Preece out of the way now and hold my Logano, or just keep stacking these, because I haven't really used a big guy except outside of Blaney at Phoenix. You know, he was my lock at Phoenix.
And that's same for me. Like, I've only used Reddick as like a big guy.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. And then we both use Bowman at Vegas, but overall, like, we're pretty much, in save mode here. Mm-hmm. I am. I'm going to go Preece, I think.
Well, there's no rush.
I want to?
You're not obliged to take him until the show's over. Yeah, I'm gonna have a little more of this passion. I was just trying not to have too much, but it's good. This strawberry lemonade.
I told you, man. That's one of my favorites.
It's good. It's good.
Let me. Okay, I need like a coin to flip here. Whether I want to go Preece or Logano. I am gonna go. Fuck it. I'm going Logano. Give me Logano. I'm all in on Logano this week. Using him early.
Logano. I like it. I don't hate it. He was probably my second choice here, so I don't mind that at all.
Looking at this season standings right now, you're at 141 points through the first six races. I'm at 122. So also trying to, keep that gap not too crazy.
Yeah, makes sense. Part of it, though, I do think I've used a little bit better drivers overall. So there's that. But I still think adjusting for driver quality, I'm probably ahead by maybe 10 points or something instead of 19. That would be my guess.
Yeah.
Not a huge lead, but we've both been doing, we've been doing pretty well. Like, we haven't had any super stinkers Bristol. Outside of Bristol, but both of us had
Bristol.
That.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I'll take it. I'll go Logano.
I like it. You've used two of the three, no, all three Team Penske cars.
Yeah, in the last 4 weeks, I've used all Penske cars, which I'm fine with because, like I always say, they are not Dominator type cars, really. Like,
no.
Like, obviously, there'll be races where they are. So, give me a good finish, give me some stage points, and we'll move on, and I'll save these other guys. So.
Definitely.
So you got Austin Dillon. I got Joey Logano for 36 for 36. That's a good pick, Austin Dillon.
Yeah, I think I'd rather take Austin Dillon for this Richmond race than the one later in the season when desperation sets in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Richmond, very good track for him. And yeah, so, like, You look at his average finish, and you look at what tracks they are. Homestead's number one, high tire wear. Mm-hmm. Auto Club's number two, high tire wear. Darlington's number four, high tire wear. Vegas number five,
High tire wear, yeah.
And then Richmond's number seven, high tire wear.
Yeah. And, like, I think a lot of that is skewed by one or two bad finishes or whatever. But I think in terms of like actual performance, this might be his best track.
I agree. 100%.
And then, even though he's great at Homestead, like, let's be real. You're either using like a Larson or a Reddick or a Chastain or somebody like that at Homestead. Now, I can't use Reddick because I already used him on Coda. But you get the idea. At Homestead, you're probably using one of those type of guys.
Yep. So, yeah, we're going favorites for picks to win. Nick has Truex. I have Hamlin. And then 36 for 36, he has Austin Dillon. I have Joey Logano. Easter Sunday night race at Richmond this week. I think it's going to be a great race. I love Richmond. I love watching Richmond. And also, I think, like, it's relatively predictable, which also helps us because, like, that just adds to the confidence of our bets. You know, we went through quite a bit of bets that we like this week. Next week, we're looking at Martinsville before we head to Texas. So enjoy the night race this weekend. It's one of the very few night races of the year. Obviously, Coca-Cola 600 is going to be late evening into night. The Iowa race, Father's Day, is going to be a night race. And then next Richmond, or the second Richmond race, is also a night race. I didn't realize that.
Yep.
But yeah, it'll be, are you surprised that they're running this night race on Easter? I feel like that's just kind of weird.
I guess, but maybe not, because people want to spend Easter Sunday with their families or whatever. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Say, I like it because I can go do Easter things and then I have something to do at night. Like Sundays are typically my chill nights. So
it maybe it also has to do with March Madness. I need to look at the Sunday schedule.
Well, that was another thing.
Sunday schedule yet.
Ratings were up, I think, 6% for this COTA race. And that was going against, there were a lot of upsets in basketball this year that, you know, kept people, a lot of close games too. So
yeah,
that's another good sign for these ratings. Yeah, it wasn't double digit gain from last year like other races have been, but still up 6% versus what they're going against was solid to see.
Yeah. So I can't find the Sunday schedule for college basketball, but it also may make sense that they don't want to go up against that.
Yeah.
Because if I'm not mistaken, let me pull up the 2023 schedule. We're on race 7. Race 7 last year was also Richmond. But I wonder if the weekend was the same. April 9th. Yeah, no, that was the same weekend as last year. Actually, maybe it was not. I don't know. But there's possibly, like, trying to avoid a March Madness thing in there as well, as in addition to Easter, you know? So I don't know. But you're right. The TV ratings have still continued to be phenomenal, but we need to get through what is the equivalent of Martinsville next week because of the Chase Elliott effect.
Yep. Yeah, there's going to be two college basketball games on Sunday, it looks like. And I don't imagine those being – and then maybe one of them will be a night race or a night game, but there's no time set on it here that I can see on ESPN.
Yeah, that's what I was looking at. I didn't see any times. But I think one's probably going to be like early afternoon, one will be like later afternoon into early evening. So NASCAR probably won't conflict with it too much, but that's just my guess.
Right. Yeah. All right. That's going to do it for us this week on Stacking Denny's. Good luck to everybody betting fantasy-wise at Richmond, and we'll be back next week to talk Martinsville. I don't think we're sponsoring a truck this year at Martinsville, but you never know. So. You never know what can come together. All right. See you guys.